Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
And now for something completely different.
Hey, I'm a Hall of Famer. I'm in 3 Halls of Fame. For the young fans, they don't give a damn. They just give a damn about themselves and what they're hearing now. And I got no problem with those rules. I know the rules going in. I'm happy to play the game that way.
And when Ivan came off with that knee drop from the top rope and he pinned me, I thought that something happened. I couldn't hear a thing. You could have heard a pin drop in that arena. It touched me so deeply that when I went in the dressing room, I really felt depressed.
I'll tell you that, I'll tell you right to his face. And with Hogan and I, if he wanted to get in a real street fight with me, trust me, he would lose. And he knew it.
You know, that's the other thing. They give you the belt, and they're like, okay, you're in charge of me. I was like, what?
When you mentioned a guy like Harley Race, that kind of legendary status, it's obvious why people would get upset.
As far as I'm concerned, Roddy Piper was not a wrestler. He wasn't even a good worker. If he had to go out and work his way to the top and not have good friends like Jim Barnett. I mean, I'm not saying he's not a good guy. He's just not a tough guy.
Bro, I swear to you, I don't have an ego. Like, I don't give a crap. That stuff is not important to me. People don't know me. They have no idea of who I am. They know of me as being a fictional character that they saw on TV.
People didn't understand that, you know, the guy they saw in the ring that happened to be using his real name and happened to actually be the president of the company, they really believed that that guy that they loved to hate was actually a pretty decent guy. And I think many people have the perception that I really was that character.
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today is a former WCW wrestler, a former All Japan Pro Wrestling wrestler. You may know him as Thunder from WCW, part of the Thunder and Lightning tag team. He is, of course, Clark Haynes. Clark, welcome to the two-man power trip. How you doing?
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You know, recently I was talking to Chad Brock, who had mentioned, you know, a country music star, who had mentioned your name. But what's going on in your world? What have you been up to?
Well, I've been on a truck of out of wrestling for some time, and after I got out of wrestling, I went into the trucking business with my father-in-law. He had a trucking company, and so I did that for probably the last 22, 23 years, and about 4 or 5 years ago, we sold our company. So that's one of the reasons kind of why I decided at the time to make a change when we were wrestling in WCW.
Just to, like, get out of the business as far as you were done with the business, or you'd just rather have done, you know, the trucking and do, you know, some real life stuff rather than some wrestling stuff?
Yeah, I mean, when I got into wrestling, I mean, that's really what I wanted to do. And Jeff, I don't know if you remember talking to Jeff Farmer.
Oh, of course. Jeff, yeah. Yep.
Jeff was Lightning. And so we both decided to get into it. And Jeff and I have been best friends pretty much most of our life. And so I didn't plan on to really get out of it. I mean, I had, if you'd asked me, I had, bigger ambitions than to just get in and decide to get out. But I decided to make a change, and there was reasons why, but I decided to just have a little more control over my life.
Now, Jeff talked to him probably a couple of years ago. Obviously, he went on to become Fake Sting and Cobra, mm-hmm. and he did a lot of things in New Japan Pro Wrestling as well as WCW. Do you still talk to Jeff today?
Oh, yeah. We're still, to this day, best friends. When Jeff and I started, we came out of Steve Kern's school in Tampa. Just if you want me to give you a little bit of kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, definitely.
A little insight. And so... We were, both of us had more of a bodybuilding background. And so we became friends with this guy named Todd, and he was going to Kern school. And so anyhow, we would talk to him some. And so one day Jeff and I roomed together. We're in an apartment. And so one day it was kind of, I still can remember, I came out and I said, Jeff, I said, I know what we can do to make some money. He goes, what's that, bro? And I said, let's go into professional wrestling. He goes, let's do it. So we decided to go. Yeah, I remember it cost us $2,000 a piece cash. And so we signed up and we started, and it was hell. I think Kern, with Kern, he had, we practiced in Mike Graham's warehouse. It was off a road off of Tyson, which was an industrial section in Tampa. And so Steve at the time had a guy that helped him, Jimmy Backlund, and then there was Ron Slinker. Ron Slinker was the father of Dennis, which later became Tex in Shanghai in WCW. And so anyway, it was basically them three. And I think when we got in there, Steve and those guys, they looked at us and probably thought, okay, we got a couple hotshot bodybuilders here who think they're going to be superstars in wrestling. So we'll show them. And so basically at practice, when we would go, the practice was literally slam after slam after slam, suplex, suplex, slams, getting drop kicked in the face, power slams. Basically, for the first 2 months, they just tortured us. And I can remember about every week, if there was somebody new in there, that they would literally take guys and they would literally just, you'd have one arm on one guy's shoulder, another on the other guy's shoulder, and they would just literally drag you out and throw you out the front door and say, get the hell out of here and stuff. And there was no guarantees on anything. There was no refunds. If I saw guys come and go the first day and they just basically just, just beat them up. And so
took their money. Yeah.
Yeah. But that was, later you kind of find out once you start learning a little bit more and how the territories were and stuff between, maybe the Midwest and, Georgia and Florida. Florida was, and I probably realized this more when I watched some of the stuff they had on Vice, where they had the territories and then they had the stuff on the wrestlers. And I think when I heard them talk about the territories and Florida being a territory and how brutal Florida was, many, many years ago, it was like, that's where I think they said they broke Hogan's ankle. Yep. And he came back. And so that was kind of, I think, just the way it was. It was old school wrestling, which I have no regrets. I'm happy to say that I came out of Kern school, but basically for like 2 months they just beat us to death. I can remember the first few times of practice we would we drive back to Orlando and getting out of the car, I mean, we couldn't hardly get out of the car and walk, and So we kept coming back. And after, I remember there was one time, I think it was like maybe a couple months into it, there was one practice where they just absolutely just beat us to death so much. And I remember going back to practice the next time. And what they would do at practice is, you know, we were like the new guys, the guys coming in. So you'd have guys like veteran guys, like sometimes the Nasty Boys would be down, they were down there, and you'd have some other locals and stuff, and they could get in and work and do the stuff they wanted to in the beginning. And then they'd be like, okay, you know, you guys, and then we would get in there, and then it was just, you know, they would just, you know, they were teaching us stuff. But don't get me wrong, we learned a lot, but in the beginning, it was basically a gut check for us. And so I can remember Jeff and I, we were trying to practice, and everything when they were training us was laid in. It was stiff as hell. Jeff and I would go out to UCF and practice. Jeff played football at UCF. He was a middle linebacker and could have played pro football. So we would go out to UCF and we'd go on the mats, and the padded mats that are on the floor, and we would practice slamming each other and suplexing each other on the mats. And so that's just, you know, how we thought it was. And so after about 2 months, we started getting up in the ring and stuff. We started saying, when do we get to start slamming some people? And so they thought, okay, we'll put you two guys against each other, and we'll just let y'all, since we can't kill you, we'll let you guys kill each other. And so me and Jeff were coming off the ropes full speed, like they were doing to us, laying in shoulder tackles. When we would slam each other, we were putting each other through the floor, and suplexes and snap suplexes were hard. Arm drags were for real. It wasn't anything but locking the guy and trying to throw him across the ring. So drop kicks, laying him in. So after about another month, I would say, we had kind of felt like we had kind of earned our spot. We were not going to quit. They couldn't make us quit, and there was no way they were going to run us out of there. And Jeff and I were, you know, we were big and we were strong and we were confident. In our background, I think, training and, you know, training really hard in the gym for years and years and years and years, I think kind of helped us with that. And Jeff played ball. So both of us were not, weak-minded. We were already strong-minded. So after about 3 months, we started jumping up in the gym, jumping up in the ring first. And they would say, hey, rookies, the veteran guys would say, hey, rookies, out of the ring. And we'd say, no, you're not getting out of the ring. Said, if you want to wrestle, get in here with us. But we're not getting out of the ring. And it was like, we felt like nobody was going to make us get out of the ring. They were just going to have to deal with us. And so some guys started getting up in the ring and doing stuff. And we were working with them just like we thought it was. We were slamming them. They were recoiling off the rings. I can remember taking a guy and sending him off the ropes. And when he hit the rope, he hit it with his chest and he couldn't even turn around in time. And by the time he was halfway turned around, we were trying to decapitate him. And arm drags, and we were throwing them, and guys were getting hurt. And so Steve jumped up in the ring, and he said, okay, we're gonna kind of wise you up now, how to work, yeah, and not kill anybody. So then everything, you know, they finally taught us, and we learned. And it was shortly after that, we hadn't even, maybe 6 months into it, there was a guy in Orlando, his name was Eddie Mansfield. We didn't know anything about Eddie. Eddie was, he had gotten started a league called the International Wrestling Federation, and it was in Orlando, and he was doing all of his TV tapings at Universal Studios. It was a new league starting up. So Todd, the guy that was going to, that we ended up finding out about Steve's school, Todd went into the ring in Eddie's league, and he wrestled as Thor. And there was a guy named Mondo Clean wrestled. And so we joined, and that's when we became Thunder and Lightning. And so our first match we actually had was on TV. Of all the matches, our first match, real match, was on TV, and I think the whole match was like 6 minutes long. You know,
recorded at Universal Studios, right?
Yeah, and we did all our TV tapings at Universal Studios. And then we'd do some house shows, and we would, you know, we travel around. I can remember going to some places. I think we went to the AOA campgrounds one time in Okeechobee, and I think there was like 20 people there. And so, you know, we started out, but it was practice. It was fun. We didn't hardly make, I think there was a few times where we didn't even get a paycheck that night.
Wow.
And one of the things I can honestly say this, and I'm probably most proud about this was, and Jeff too, I can honestly say that of every match I've ever had, when I started and there was 20 people there, and or if I was wrestling in Japan at the Budokan for Baba's group, or doing a pay-per-view super brawl, and there was maybe 15, 20,000 people there, I can honestly say that every match I ever had, I went out with the attitude that I was going to have the best match of the night. And obviously they wasn't all
right.
But if those 20 people came, I felt like those 20 people deserved a show. And it wasn't going to be one of those things where, well, nobody's here, so let's don't work hard. You know, we went out and we just were, you know, it was more than just going out and, you know, kind of spend a night. It was to make it work, to give people a good show, and to kind of perfect our craft. And so I remember in the beginning when we started, we had a match one time. There was a guy that practiced with us down in Tampa. His name was Tony Mella. He was like the Cuban assassin. And so we had a match. It was a TV taping match. And I don't know how, you know, if it was the first TV taping or the second. I don't think it was the first one. But the second one or third one. But anyhow, we had a match. It was a tag match. And in the match, we did this move where Jeff underhooks him, pulls him back. He tags me. I come off the top rope, and I come down with like a forearm and just basically just kind of I landed on his chest. Jeff moves out of the way, and he takes a bump, and he goes back. And I'd done it, you know, 50 times. And so in the match, I come down, do it. Tony rolls out of the ring, and he never comes back in. So the match doesn't go kind of like what we kind of thought it was going to go. So Tony rolls out of the ring, and so we get in the back, and I'm going to say, you know, we're going to say something to him like, Tony, what the heck are you doing or something? And so as he comes through the curtains, he's holding his chest, and he's like in excruciating pain. I mean, excruciating pain. And he goes back. The paramedics are running over to him. He sits down. I mean, you can't like even touch his arm. He's in so much pain. So we're really concerned. And so they sat there and they were working on him. They had to take him to the hospital in an ambulance. And later, and I thought too, I mean, Tony was a friend of mine. And I thought, this is not going to be good. I haven't been wrestling more than 6 months, and I may have already killed somebody. And right, I thought, this is a bad reputation to have. And so I called him up on the phone, and I said, Tony, brother, I said, you okay? And he goes, yeah, man. He goes, I'm okay. He goes, I just got one request. And I said, what's that? I said, anything. He says, if we next time we wrestle, we don't do that move again. And it was just kind of a freak. When I looked at it on video, my elbow just kind of, it just was off. It just was off. It wasn't the way I meant to do it. Ended up breaking his sternum is what happened.
So
we wrestled with Eddie, and we had shows. I remember we used to have a tour, and then we called it the Power in Paradise Tour. And some of us used to kind of just say, we called it the Power in Poverty Tour, because it seemed like it cost us more money than we actually made. Yeah. I remember, I don't know if you remember Kip, Mr. Ass.
Yep.
And Mike was the guy who won the match when they did, it was the thing when they wanted to have a shoot fight. Yeah.
Bart Gunn.
Yeah. And so they were at the time they were the Long Riders. They still had the same gimmick, and we wrestled them about every night and for probably a year. And great guys. And then in the league, Blackjack Mulligan, I guess at the time, wasn't really doing anything. So he came into our league. And Blackjack, what a great – Blackjack was probably – I have to say it was probably one of my – was probably my favorite guy out of all the wrestlers I ever met. Blackjack was probably my favorite.
Wow.
And he was such a great guy. I can remember, and whatever Blackjack and whatever Jack wanted to do, if he said, okay, I'm going to be the main event, or you guys are going to be the main event against the Long Riders, okay, Jack, whatever. And so I can remember times we'd go to this town and we were trying. And at the time, wrestling was not really anywhere. Was not really doing that great. I can remember, even in WCW, I don't think they were pulling huge numbers at the time. They had their stars, but wrestling was just, there was nothing really in wrestling, I think, at the time, except maybe WWE had Hogan and them guys, and that was going. But we were trying to build territories in Florida, and I can remember Jack coming over to us and sitting me and Kip and Mike and Jeff down. We're like five chairs there. And Jack would look at us and he'd say, guys, y'all seen some of the matches. And we had a lot of, guys, that hadn't made it to the big league in the state that were doing independents and great guys. But we just didn't have a lot of really experience. The only guy that was really experienced, I think Kip had some experience. He'd been wrestling a while, but the rest of us were super green. So Jack would say, guys, if y'all don't go out there and have the match of your life, we can never come back and wrestle in this town again. Mm-hmm. And we would go out and we would do the best we could. And we ended up having really pretty good matches together. And so over time, we had some magazine coverage. We had TV for all of our matches, which is pretty good for a small league. And they had the big Universal. I mean, Eddie really had a good thing going. I just think at the time, wrestling just wasn't like the big storylines and stuff. We had some guys that were, we had some good talent, but it just was kind of hard. But I think he did a great job, and he was always very kind to us and very sincere and very honest and straight. And we wanted to do great for him. And so, in time, they had a tryout. We had a match. I remember this was the match where all of us decided, me, Jeff, Kip, and Mike decided to do something else. We had a match. It was down in, I think it was down in Fort Pierce. And that was probably one of the best places we wrestled. It was in a little auditorium, had a good crowd. So before the match started, the promoter guy said, listen, he said, I don't want no broken chairs. I don't want any broken tables. He goes, if you break anything, you're paying for it. You know, he didn't want us nobody slamming anybody on tables. And so he told everybody that. Well, I was the only guy that wasn't there. I was in upstairs using the restroom. So the match starts. When the match starts, and so we're in the middle of the match, and I remember we're outside the ring, and I pick Kip up to slam him on the table, and he's going, not on the table, not on the table, not on the table, he's saying. So I slam him on the table and bends a leg on the table, and the promoter was, they said he was unglued. So we go back and we finish the match. I didn't know. I didn't ever hear it. So we go in the back, and so then the promoter says, you're going to pay for it. So I think he took like, I think Eddie took like $20 out of all of our pay, you know, and nobody was really mad at me or anything like that, but it just, we, I don't know, it just kind of, we thought, that's enough of this. So anyway, Kip was mad, and I said, Kip, I said, tell him we want that table too. And so anyhow, so Kip turns around and goes, yeah, we want that damn table. So after the everything was over, Kip and I and Jeff and Mike took the table and we put it out in the parking lot. We went and bought some beer and we sat on the table and drank beer. And right after that, Kip and Mike, and I think they were going to go to WWF at the time. And so Jeff and I were in the league. And so Blackjack, I guess, had been talking to WCW, and also we had gotten during the end of this time with IWF, we had gotten to be friends with Dory Funk Jr. Dory lived in Ocala where I grew up, but Dory was looking to send us to All Japan, and so he was kind of working on that. So anyhow, for Baba and for a tag team tournament. So anyway, they were staging a tryout. Jack told us, he said, they're staging a tryout in Tampa and they want to look at you guys. And Jody Hamilton was going to come down to look at me and Jeff. And he said, and they said, well, while we're down there, let's look at the talent that's in Florida. So it didn't take much to put out the word where you had most, you know, all the guys that were wrestling in Florida came out to wrestle. And so we had like a little dark match, and our match really, really stunk. I mean, it just was bad, and we knew it was bad. We thought we looked like shit during the match. And so we got in the back, and we were so upset with ourselves. We thought, man, we just blew our chance right there. So after we came out, the Jody was saying, he said, okay, guys, he said, appreciate everybody coming out. And he said, you know, what WCW is looking for is they're looking for cosmetics. He said, they're looking for guys who've been working out. They're looking for muscle. And so a lot of the guys that knew us and stuff, they kind of looked around at us, and so basically everybody left, and Jack told us to stay. So it was me and Jeff and Jody Hamilton, which, you know, was the original Assassin and master tag team technician. So he was there. I didn't know Jody at the time. I knew Dory some. I'd been over to Dory's house and played ping pong with him and stuff like that. And we'd been over watching.
Awesome. Them, wow.
Yeah, with Marty, his wife, Marty. Dory was a great guy. I can remember just sitting there watching videos of him and like wrestling Inoki and stuff in the ring, the matches, and just how good he was. And so it was Blackjack, Jody Hamilton, Dory was there. So we're sitting around listening to some of these old stories and stuff. And then it was like this. Now, we had already been on TV. We had been the tag team champions. We had magazine coverage. You know, the house shows we were doing, you know, we had a, like, we were building a following. And so But yet we had no calls coming from the big leagues. And Dory was interested and he wanted to send us to Japan, but it wasn't happening. And basically right then at the time, really there was only like really four places. You had WCW, WWF, New Japan, All Japan. And if you wanted to, you know, make any money, that's kind of where you had to go. So we're standing around and Blackjack just kind of gave us a nod. He said to Jody, he goes, "Jody, he's a couple good guys." That's all he said. And that was kind of it. And so we left. The next day I get a call from Jody. And he says, "Hey, I talked to the office up here and I want you to come up." He goes, "How soon can you get here?" And it kind of caught me off guard. And I said, "Well, a few weeks or something." He goes, "Nah." He says, "You got to get up here quicker than that." So I said, "Okay." And then we ended up breaking our lease on an apartment, which came back to get me a couple of years later, because it showed up or something when I was doing, showed up like the last day before I did a closing on a house where I owed the apartment complex like $900. But
oh, damn.
Yeah. But, you know, so anyway. So I told Jeff, and my first call was to my wife now, who was my girlfriend at the time, Tiffany. And I said, and we had always kind of said, if something happens and I get the call, then, you know, we're just going to get married. We'd been dating for a few years. So I called her up and I said, "Well, you better pick out a dress, because, you know, we just got called to go up to WCW. So we broke our lease, took basically what we could load up in his pickup truck. Went to Atlanta, and then we showed up at the infamous power plant, and we were one of probably the first crew that ever came out of the power plant. I think there were some guys who were already there. I can't remember what Jimmy's last name was, but Jimmy wrestled later. He wrestled as Jungle Jim in the beginning.
Jim Steele.
Yeah, Jimmy Steele. Was that his real name, or is that what he went by? Steele, Jimmy Steele.
Oh, you know what? I forget his real. No, he went by Jim Steele, but I forget his real last name. I actually talked to him not that long ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Jimmy. Yeah, Jimmy was there. There was about five other guys that were there, and so we show up to the power plant, and we're thinking, okay. And Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker was the guy that was running at the time. God, he. And so anyway, we, you know, everybody, like, we knew like weeks later what was going to happen. So now is a real gut check. Now, we came out of Kern school, where they basically just beat us to death. We kind of thought we're through with all this stuff now. You know, we've kind of made it to the point to where, you know, we're kind of wrestlers now and we'll learn and stuff. Well, that wasn't going to be the case again. So we took a 5-gallon bucket. We all got in a circle. They took two decks of cards. Black was push-ups, reds was squats. And if it was a black 10 of spades, that was 10 push-ups. If it was a queen of hearts, that was 10. A queen of hearts, that was going to be 20. Everything in the red was double. An ace was like, I think, 50. And if he had a joker, God help you, that was 100 squats. And so they basically, Sarge pulls the cards, and you got to touch your butt on the bucket. And by the time you get finished with whatever the card was, now the next card's up. And they're just going and going and going and going. And man, my legs are like blown up. Like, I can't hardly move them. And we're thinking, holy shit, man, we just came up here, we're up here at WCW, and they're down here, we're going through this kind of crap again.
Yeah, and so, crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of pissed, really. And so, but we're here, we moved, we're here, we're not going anywhere, we're going to stay, so whatever happens, happens. But we kind of thought we were finished with this type of training. And so Sarge, I mean, we're kind of like, you know, we're having a little bit of trouble. And so we were down one time and I said like, "F you" to Sarge. And he comes over and he goes, "What'd you say?" And I wouldn't say it again. And so we got up. And then at one point, Jeff was kind of the point where he was just, his, he just came out. He kicked his bucket so friggin' hard that it flew over everybody's head. It must have went 25 feet, ricocheted off the wall, and came down, and all the guys were yelling at me and Jeff. And me and Jeff were like back to back thinking, we're going to fight everybody in this place. Even though if we'd have took one step, we would have hit the floor because we couldn't have moved, and they just all would have beat the hell out of us.
Right.
So Blackjack was in the office of the power plant with Jody. And so Jody wanted to see what the heck's going on out there. So he walks out to look, and Jack's out there with him looking, and we're the commotion, me and Jeff are. And so Blackjack looked at Jody and he goes, Jody, couple high-spirited boys there, a couple high-spirited boys. And they turned around and went back in the office. So we were showing up, going through it, and we would do that, and then we'd get in the ring, and we'd do some more stuff, run, hit the ropes, you know, kick back, hit, hit our back on the ring, and then we'd do other stuff, and then we'd wrestle. And we would be there for like 4 or 5 hours, and we wasn't even getting lunch. We'd get there like 10, get finished at 4. So after about 2 weeks, Jack looks at us. He was gone, I guess, back to Florida or something. He come back to trainers, and he looks at me and Jeff. He goes, my God, how much weight have you guys lost? I said, I don't know, Jack. I said, I'm scared to get on the scale, man. We can't eat lunch and doing this. So he went, I think it's when he went to Bischoff, and he says, you know, you hired these guys because you want them big. He says, man, they're not eating nothing. So kind of because of that, we all started getting lunch. And so after a period of time, we just kind of got used to it. But I learned so much from Sarge. If Sarge would have been, say, 6'2", he'd have been one of the best, baddest heels that would have ever come out of wrestling. But he, Buddy Lee Parker, Sarge, we call him, I learned more from him than I did anybody. I mean, wow. it was, we learned all kinds of stuff. It was really good wrestling stuff. And over time, we gained so much respect for each other. I had so much respect for Sarge. And so we started wrestling, and so anyway, it went on for, I guess we wrestled for about a year or so like that before I decided to get out. But anyway, that was kind of how, and I remember right after we got out there, I don't even know if we'd had a match yet with WCW. I think we had a couple dark matches, and I get a call from Dory. And Dory says, calls me up at home. He says, hey, he goes, Bob wants you guys to come over to do a tag team tournament. I said, wow. I said, gosh, Dory. I said, man, I really appreciate it. I said, you know that really what we were kind of more interested in was Japan than we were even in WCW or the WWF. And I said, but, you know, I've already made a commitment. He goes, I understand. So we were up at the CNN Center, I think, like within a couple days or something. We went up there to sign some papers. And at the time, Ole was the booker, Ole Anderson. And he was the booker. So anyway, we up there and we're getting ready to leave or something. And he turns around and he goes, oh, by the way, he says, Junior called. And he said, he wants you to come over and do a tour in Japan. And I said, yes, sir. I said, I know. I said, I told him I couldn't because we'd already made a commitment. He goes, I know you did. That's why I'm going to let you go. So he let us go to Japan and wrestle. And we actually, I think we got two paychecks, one for WCW, and we got paid for Japan. And that was really cool. And I think we had 17 matches in 21 days and stuff.
Did you like your experience over there?
Yeah, I did. On the card, we had Steve Williams and his partner was Gordy. Actually, Jeff and I don't know how much you know about the end of Gordy's career, but Jeff and I were on the flight that was basically the end of his career. And, wow. Because, you know, Gordy had You know, he didn't get to wrestle that tour. Steve Williams was on the ticket. Him and Gordy were the tag team champions. And they, I think they were giving the titles back. It was going to be to Kobashi and Mazawa. And so Patriot was on there. Dale was on there. And his partner, Doug Furness, was on it. And they were Can-Am, him and Doug. And that was Doug and I can't remember his partner's name. Abdullah the Butcher
LaFon,
was there.
Bill LaFon, if you will.
Was that it? Yeah.
Well, I guess Danny Crawford, technically.
In yeah, Japan, Danny.
But they have to call them Philip LaFon, yeah.
Yeah, Danny. Danny was his name. And so I think it was Kamara and Abdullah the Butcher were tag team. Stan Hansen was on it. DiBiase came over for one or two matches, and he left and came back. I don't know if he had an injury. But so I remember we were on the way over. I can remember because we were flying out of Atlanta, and I can remember Gordy, and I hadn't met him yet, knew of Gordy. I think the first time I ever saw Gordy was on the movie Highlander when he was doing the scene in the beginning of that movie.
Yep.
With the Freebirds and stuff. So he was an intimidating looking guy. I mean, he just looked like a tough dude. So I hadn't met him yet. And so we're on the plane, and I can remember Gordy in the front of the plane. I was looking, and he was pissed. He goes, "I don't know who the F is in my seat." He goes, "But somebody's getting out." And he looked like he was going to grab and rip somebody out of their seat, like they didn't have a seat for him. And I remember just thinking, man, that dude really is a heel. Yeah. And so we flew. I remember one of the guys that was on the plane, and I'm not going to – I think his name was – I can't think of his name. But he just did Japan. I remember when we saw him in Atlanta, and and we looked down at his leg, and he had had crazy weird pants on, and his pants were shredded from the ankle up to his knee. And he had, you could see in his shin bone, he had like teeth marks where he had slipped like on an escalator and just ripped his pants, and he had teeth marks into his shin bones.
Oh my God.
And his leg was bleeding, his foot had blood all over it and stuff, and he wasn't even aware of it. I mean, he was just, he had so many painkillers that Deaton, Joel Deaton was his name.
Yeah, there you go, yeah.
Yeah, and we just couldn't believe it. He wasn't dying of pain, and he was just wearing it around. So when we got to Los Angeles, I guess Gordy had fallen down in the terminal, and so they didn't want to let him on the plane, and it was very important for him to be on that plane for Steve and Gordy, because they had to get the titles back at the Budokan. And so so Gordy fell down, and they didn't want him on the plane. Well, Steve says, no, he's sick. He's got to be on that plane, and pushed. So they said, okay, all right, we're going to let him on. So they called in the DEA, and the DEA, about 10 guys came in with dogs and everything and went through everybody's bags and stuff, and he got on the plane. And it was like 11-hour flight, and by the time we landed in Tokyo, he had OD'd. And so they took him to the hospital, and he, I guess he had slipped into a coma. And so we, you know, I think they said like 13 days later, they ended up flying him back. But me and Jeff were just talking about this the other day, and we were like, you know, I don't think there's anybody even hardly alive anymore of all those guys that.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, that actually kind of were there when that happened. And I think Gordy, I think he wrestled a little bit more after that, and then he just kind of retired. But that was pretty
tough.
Joel's
got health problems too now. Joel had a stroke, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, and I understand how you know, guys can, you know, can have problems with that. I think, you know, there was, when we were in WCW, we were drug tested. That's when the big thing came out with Hogan. And I think Canseco might have started all that. And so then they started, you know, it came to surface. And so, but, you know, wrestling, I can remember sometimes having 26 matches in a month. And if you get hurt, you know, you got to, you know, either you're going to have to wrestle in pain or somebody can replace you. Now, we could have been replaced. So if we'd have been hurt and we couldn't wrestle, they would have replaced us because we hadn't been in there that long. We wasn't a real name guy. But you just kind of had to always go. And so, I, you know, I could see, I mean, it's, your body takes, it takes a lot of abuse and you don't, you know, and it's rough. It's a rough business. And, I had a match in Macon one time and, it was a TV match. I think it's actually on YouTube. It's me and Jeff with, against Jeff. And I think it was Big John or something like that, or Max Muscle. I can't believe it's even on YouTube. Some people sometimes would say, I saw one of your matches on YouTube. And I thought, I can't believe that stuff's even on there. You know?
Oh,
so,
yeah. Yep.
So in the match, we had a match. And John and Kevin, you know, John was also another guy that came out. He went by Max Muscle.
Yep.
He was, like, huge. He was so big. You know, he weighed like 320 pounds. He was solid. He came out of the power plant too. He was actually in the power plant and Jimmy when Jeff and I showed up. And so they'd already been there for a while, but I don't think it was long. So anyway, we had a match. And so during the match, I went and I ducked his elbow and I was going to duck his clothesline. And he was, you know, we were all from old school and stuff. So when you throw a clothesline, you better look like you're going to tear the guy's head off and he better get his head down. You know, it wasn't going to look anything. It looked pulled.
Right.
And so as it goes a lot of times in wrestling, the timing was just off. And he kind of, you know, when I looked back at it, we looked at it on film, he was kind of pulling a little bit. I came up a little bit early. And when he hit me, he hit me right in the face, right on the nose, as hard as he could swing. And on the video, it hits me, and you can see my head go back. And I remember all the boys in the back behind the curtain, they said when I got hit, and it was in Macon, and the auditorium was pretty full, they all heard it. And they went, what the hell is that? And one of the guys goes, thunder's hurt. So when I went off the rope, I came out and I went straight down to my knees and I was holding my face. I think I was unconscious seriously for about 15 seconds. And
wow,
so,
damn.
So John, you know, John was kind of shocked, you know, that this happened. Kevin, the most experienced of all of us, he got Johnny tagged and he came in and it was great because he was like working my face. And when it hit me, I had like blood coming like out the side of my nose. And I think I had some blood in my eyes. My nose was bleeding. And I remember when I was sitting there and the referee was talking to me. I couldn't hear nothing. And all of a sudden, remember the first thing was the sound was coming back. Here comes the sound. And I'm sitting there. And then I remember the pain settled in. And so anyway, so we're going working and we're trying to finish the match. And, Zbyszko loved it because they actually had something they could really talk about. And the crowd saw something, that they just probably didn't get to see all the time. Excuse me. So we go up to finish the match and we had this finishing move. We call it the death bolt, where Jeff would take a guy, invert him. I would come off the top rope and kind of come down on his chest. And he would just kind of turn a flip. It was a cool finish. But when Jeff came over to tag me, I said, I don't think I can do it. I said, I'm seeing three. He goes, hit the one in the middle, is what he said. Huh. So I started climbing the rope, and all the guys in the back were going, no, 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 don't go up on the rope. Don't go up on the rope. So we came off, and I came down on him, but just as easy as I came down on him, I could have come down and hit nothing but air, too.
Right.
So anyway, we finished the match. We got out of the ring. We go in the back. Paramedics are waiting for me. And so I sit down. They sit me down on the ground. They're getting their stuff. And I'm sitting there, and I remember Sags comes over to me. And he leans down, and he looks at me. He goes, hey, Thunder. He goes, is your nose broke? And I looked up, and I go, I don't know. And he reaches down with his two thumbs, fingers like this, and he squeezes me by the nose. And I go, ow. He looks, and he goes, yep, it's broke, he said. So we finished the match, and I remember we had one day off. The next day, I go down to the power plant. And I remember that night, though, I went home to our apartment, and my wife was there, and I told her, I said, I had a little accident at night, so she's looking at me. And so I went to blow the blood out of my nose right in front of her, and my eyelid, like, blew up the size of a ping pong ball. And so where the blood, the pressure just went in my eyelid. And so I get up the next day, I go down to the power plant, and it was Ole Anderson sitting to the side, and then you had Blackjack Mulligan, and then Jody Hamilton was sitting behind his desk. And I can remember they were all at the taping, and it was a TV taping. I remember walking in, and they were sitting there, and I remember I was kind of staying, my eyes totally shut, and I looked at them. I had like one day off, and then we were scheduled to work with Harlem Heat for like 17 matches because it was going to be like our first pay-per-view. And I think it might was going to be maybe theirs too, because they had just gotten up there not long. So they wanted us to work together on the road. So then when we got to the pay-per-view, we would have a good match. And so I went up there. And I'm standing there, and I'm kind of smiling at those guys, the old timers. And I remember Ole looks up, and he goes, good for the business, kid. Good for the business is what he said to me. So we went on the road. Every night I had a headache. Every night I had a headache. So we wrestled. And after like our road trip and stuff, when we got back, I remember I thought, I'm going to go down and get checked out. So all the wrestlers went to this athletic department, this place where the wrestlers went there, the Falcons went there. It was like a big sports complex. The Hawks went there. I think the Braves went there. So I went in. The doctor, he takes x-rays and stuff, and he said, so he's looking at it and he's diagnosing my stuff. He goes, well, he said, I would say, he goes, you broke your nose. He goes, you got a deviated septum. He says, one day you can probably get that fixed if it causes you any problems. He said, you cracked it was my orbital, whatever. I cracked my cheekbone completely through when he hit me. So it cracked it all the way through. And I'd say you got a bad concussion. And I said, doctor, I said, I have a bad concussion or I had a bad concussion. And he goes, oh, you got a good one. He goes, you ain't been wrestling, have you? And I said, yeah, 17 matches. And he kind of sunk his head down. He says, well, all I can tell you is you're a lucky man. Because one good shot, and he says, you could have went into a coma. Wow. They were great guys to work with.
So that was Super Brawl 4. Was that the only pay-per-view you guys were on?
Jeff probably did more. That was the only one I did.
Yeah, I mean, together, yeah.
Yeah, yes.
What'd you think just in general about the time there as Thunder and Lightning? Did you think you should have got a bigger push, more TV time? Did you need more work? Like, what did you think about your time there?
It kind of seemed to me, because I was honestly, I felt confident. I really thought I was confident that we could get over. I did realize when I got up there that we had a lot to learn. But it kind of seemed like it depended on who was the booker. Like when we first got there, Ole was the booker. And Ole kind of liked our style because, you know, we knew how to wrestle. We could do the flying stuff off the ropes and we could do that. But he just kind of liked the way he could work with us. And so he kind of liked our style, so everything was cool. And so then he lost his position to
Dusty?
Yeah, he lost it to Dusty. And I think Sting got pissed at Ole or something. Ole said something and I think Sting went over his head and he lost, and Ole lost his job to Dusty. And so when Dusty was the booker, everything was still cool with us. They weren't really pushing us hard, but they were pushing us, but they were kind of developing us. But we wasn't getting a big push, but we were fine with that. I mean, we just felt like, you know, we're here. We're just going to keep learning, keep improving, trying to do the best we can. And we had some good matches. We wrestled many times, Orndorff and Roma.
Pretty wonderful,
Yeah. And Booker T and Stevie Ray were great to work with. So everything's okay. Everything was okay. And so then Dusty lost his booking job to Flair. And then when Flair came in, then he kind of had his guys. So it still wasn't nobody, and it wasn't hurting us or anything like that. And everything was still okay. But I can remember you're in the back, you're around all the boys and stuff, and I can remember just hearing some of the guys talk. Like one of the guys didn't want the office to know that he had bought a house because he was afraid they might use it over his head to hold it against him. And but everything was still good. And so in time, I kind of saw a little bit of the business that I didn't really like a lot. And but I liked, but I still believed in it and I liked it. And so there came a point to where, I had to make a decision. My wife's father had a trucking company, and I was very happily married. And so I just kind of made the decision to walk away from the business. And walked away from the business, and that was really, really hard for me because, we had kind of worked hard to establish ourselves, and so Jeff, now had to start over, and that was the hardest thing for me, was to get out and knowing that it was going to hurt him and stuff. But he ended up doing good, and I was happy about that. So, and I remember when I got out, a lot of the guys said, oh, he'll be back. He'll be back. And I just, missed it a little bit the first year or so, but I never really looked back.
And it's funny, Jeff had a nice, long, healthy run after you left. But as we start to head towards the finisher, we wind it down. Do you regret leaving the business? Is there any regrets from wrestling? Is there something you look back on and wish could have changed?
No, I think one of the things, looking back on hindsight, I think Vizdori wanted to manage us before we got to WCW. He wanted to manage us. And so we were so excited to get picked up by Big League. You know, I told Jody, I said, you know, Dory would like to manage us. He goes, yeah, you don't need a manager. So we just decided to go. I think looking back, I think if I had to do over, I would have just said, no, I'm going to stay with Dory. I'm going to stay with Dory and let him manage us, because Dory probably would have sent us to Japan. He would have managed us. And to have a guy with so much wisdom and so being so respected, I think Dory could have looked out for us and stuff too. So, no. But looking back, no, I have absolutely no regrets, because I feel like you know, God always has a plan, and that, you know, I wouldn't have had my kids, my two sons, and it was good. You know, I've had a good life, and I got two fine men now that I raised, and I don't think I would have had it. And I don't think, I just wouldn't have been home like that. And so, yeah, I have no regrets. In the beginning, it was a little hard because we worked so hard. We worked so hard to get in there. And when we were helping each other buy food sometimes and stuff, struggling, you know, when we wanted to do it, the reason we went to WCW, it was like in the time when we first got the call, all of a sudden, once WCW was interested, WWF was interested. And then Baba wanted us to come over. It's kind of like we had nothing, and now we had maybe a couple options. But the reason we decided to go to WCW was because Vince would always take people and they'd change their names, change their gimmicks and everything, where WCW wouldn't do that. So we thought Thunder and Lightning was a good gimmick, and our outfits and everything kind of was cool. So we were trying to, you know, we could look kind of like superheroes and stuff with the capes and stuff when we came out. The kids liked it. And so we thought going to WCW, we could keep our names, establish ourselves. And then later, if we had an opportunity to go, you know, to work for Vince or something, we could keep our names where, you know, Vince would have took us, and no telling what he would have done with us. So that's the reason we decided to go. But anyhow, so no, I have no regrets. It was a great experience. You know, I have, you know, some stories here and there, but I'm glad that I did it. I'm happy.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like IWF, you know, quickly in IWF, the power plant, WCW, All Japan Pro Wrestling, then it's over just like that. The run is over. Man, like pretty in a small amount of time, you guys accomplished a lot and pretty damn cool. And obviously we're on pay-per-view as well. So, I mean, pretty damn cool. And all those awesome guys you wrestled in Japan and a couple of damn good ones at WCW too.
Yeah. When I was in there, there was a lot of great guys that were in there with me at the time. And Austin was in there. Steamboat, Flair, Boss Man, Rick Rude, Triple H. I think he kind of started with us in there around the same time. And Sting, Bagwell, Boss Man, Vader, Harlem Heat. It was just, and then Ron Simmons, Nasty Boys. So, yeah, and Arn Anderson, great guy. And so there was just so much talent. I mean, just to kind of be a part of it for a short time was really a blessing or an honor.
Before we let you go, is there social media? Is there a place where you'd like fans like to reach out, or not too much on the social media stuff?
No, not too much. I have an Instagram, and it's just Clark Haynes, and it's on Instagram. And I have some stuff. I have some pictures and some stuff from the gym on there. I'll probably do a little bit more and, you know, maybe post some other stuff like that. But that's all I have. I don't have YouTube or do anything else.
No more wrestling stuff in the future? Nothing Thunder and Lightning coming up?
Nothing like that? No. Jeff, I think, went to over to New Japan, I think it was a year ago, and they kind of did a tribute to a lot of the guys who were over there, you know, for him. I think Jeff wrestled for about 10 years there. And I think he went over, they did a tribute match, and some guys got to work and stuff, which is really cool. Now, I don't have no aspirations of doing anything like that again.
All right, Clark, thank you so much for all the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Hope you didn't bore you too much.
No, definitely not. I love those stories, and I love WCW. I love that stuff.
Thank you.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.